I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Don't sweat the technique.
Welcome back to the Killer Bees Nuts. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and that Jeremy Branham guy.
Well, Sean Mates has a favorite rejoinder. I think he's made that abundantly clear. Kyle Kuzma. Hold on. Before we talk about Kuzma, I wanted to get to something that Todd said. The Rockets have money so they can overpay as long as they are two-year deals. That to me is plan B. If I were running the Rockets, because I think that is their plan A. I think they are going to spend big money on a Fred VanVleet, maybe a Kyle Kuzma, maybe a Dylan Brooks, maybe a backup big. Like, that is their plan A. My plan A is what we were talking about at the end of last segment, where I'm trading for big contracts and getting draft picks in return and using my money that way. I'd rather do it that than overspend on free agents, even if it's a short-term deal, because the Rockets are still more about the future than about the next year. I know that they're ready to go into phase two. They're ready to win more basketball games. But this team is still 5 years away from reaching its full potential. So I still have that in the back of my mind. Like, Fred VanVleet, does he help you in the 2 years that he's here? Does he help the development of the young players? Yes, absolutely. Is Fred VanVleet going to be on the fire truck when the, you know, championship parade's being held? No. Like, so big picture still needs to be perhaps even at the forefront of Rafael Stone's mind, in my opinion.
He might be a member of the Bucks when they win the championship again.
The streets of downtown Houston.
Oh. When you look at it, and regardless of how they choose to spend the money or where they choose to use the money that they have to use, the one thing that you can't do is abuse the ability to do. I think this team is a better team next year and going forward, even if they did nothing else other than change the head coach and the coaching staff. I think that just the fact that Udoka stresses both ends of the floor, that Udoka and his staff know how to develop young talent, and they showed that with some of the guys that were in the rotation in Boston and the way they got guys to enhance and develop their best players by also contributing on a nightly basis and showing guys, you can contribute on the defensive end, not score a point, and be a valuable piece to this puzzle. I think that's enough to make this team better already. What you don't want is veterans that come in and say, I got to show you I'm worth the money, so I got to try and outdo what I've done in the past when I play for you. If Fred VanVleet just comes in and plays his game, he can make everybody better because, one, he makes the team better already by getting KPJ out of the starting point guard role. But, two, he's a really good shooter. He's a really good decision maker. He's a good passer. He's a solid player. And he also has been around the block enough that he doesn't have to show you like James Harden does.
Uh-huh.
And so he's a good fit. But then when you fill in the rest of your money, you don't want to fill it in with veterans that said, easy, young fella, you sit down. This is my minutes. These are my chance to shine.
Yeah.
Don't step on my toes. You don't want those guys.
What if Amin Thompson, though, is way ahead of schedule, and by game 40 of next season, you want Amin Thompson to be your starting point guard? You can't do that if you have Fred VanVleet on the max.
Yes, you
can. Can you?
Because you can trade him.
Okay.
I mean, if it happens before the deadline and you really see...
That's a good answer.
An advanced, you know, a really good advanced Amin Thompson, there's going to be teams that still want a Fred VanVleet. There's going to be... Look at how Phoenix was looking for someone already to replace Chris Paul. There's going to be good teams, especially, that could really use and would love a Fred VanVleet.
That's a great counterpoint. It's why I love you. It's why I love you. Because I was going to ask, like, does it make more sense for the direction of the Houston Rockets to trade literally nothing for Kyle Lowry. Have Miami attach a first-round pick, a couple of seconds. You have 1 year of a Kyle Lowry deal. He's your veteran point guard. He's grooming the development. Or does it make more sense to have a Fred VanVleet on the max deal for 2 years?
See, I think
it's a fair question.
And I think that Udoka could
I don't think Lowry's that good anymore, to be very, very clear.
Well, in short doses, because we saw it even in the playoffs. The games where he had spurts, he could go for 13, 14 points in a quarter. He could be a difference maker. Right after those games, he would probably go 0-for and or barely be a blip on the radar in another game and a half. And so he's giving you what James Harden could do for you, too. But at the same time, when you look at it, I think Udoka could get enough out of these guys. And if they knew that, hey, the minutes are going to be one thing, but their future's probably going to be elsewhere, that they could understand and play the role, play the deal. In Kyle's case, I think VanVleet comes in here, and he's the ideal kind of guy that Udoka wants running his ship on both ends of the floor that he could really get behind. And I think it could be beneficial to both guys because, like I said, if you get some young guys that really develop quicker, Fred VanVleet has value. Kyle Lowry does not have the value that a VanVleet does.
No, not close.
No,
not close. I'm doing that because of the draft picks, mm-hmm. and I'm doing that for I get out of the contract a year earlier. Not to say that I think Fred VanVleet's a bad player. Now, it is expensive. I think that he's not quite a max player, but the Rockets have money. The Rockets literally have to spend money.
That's what I was going to say. They have to spend it, and it's almost more beneficial to spend 40-plus on VanVleet because otherwise, if you think about it, and some people have said, spread it out. Get three or four veterans at – you know, 15 a year or 20 a year, and then you're really doing something for this team. You know what you're doing for this team for every one of those guys that you make a deal like that for? You're taking minutes from your young guys you're trying to develop. I'm all out on that. I don't want any of that. I'd Same. Rather spend 40-plus on Fred VanVleet and know that he's going to get the ball in these kids' hands in a position where they could do something with it.
Yeah, see, the youth movement of this team is still my priority.
Absolutely.
But you need a point guard. Like, you need a starting level point guard.
And we've said that.
But if the Rockets signed, like, I'm not even going to throw out names here. If the Rockets signed two free agents at high dollar, one of them's a point guard, and one of them's literally a backup big. I don't even care if he's a backup big. Like, that's fine. Like, I still want to see the youth movement of this team. I think that we differ probably with Ime Udoka. I don't think Ime Udoka really wants to be very patient with a youth movement. He might be forced to do it for the most part, but it's probably why he wants some veterans on this team. I think Tillman Fertitta wants to start, you know, walking Wait. After he crawled, and then someday they're going to be running. You know, I think he wants that pretty
he
soon.
He said this is phase two.
Absolutely.
This is where we start
winning.
He's
flat out said it's phase two.
Right.
So I think that they have a desire to win more basketball games next year than, let's say, you and I have a desire to win basketball games next year. Because I still think that the future is more important
but
than
see,
the immediate
you,
for the Houston
You also
Rockets.
Hit on what I was going to say, Jeremy, which is if we say VanVleet is where we start with the spending.
Yeah.
I skip Dylan Brooks, and I get a backup. Not even a backup. A part-time starting or capable of starting big.
See, I don't love the idea. See, that's my hang-up on Brooks. Like, I'm fine with Dylan Brooks as the player, but you have a logjam at the wing.
But that's what I'm saying.
Right,
so
I like
now,
your idea.
You got to get a veteran big that can kind of show the ropes to Şengün. I would like a defensive-minded big that could show Şengün some of the things he's not been doing that's been exposed on the defensive end.
Yeah.
Where the key minutes when you need offense from your big, you're still going to go to Şengün. But, you know, the Robert Williams types are the guys that really focus on defense and rebounding and moving your feet and switching. That's the kind of player that when you're down four with a minute and a half to play, that you want on the floor, even if you go offense, defense,
yeah.
that a guy can help you get a stop, get a rebound, and get back in transition.
Yeah, for sure. Like, if you start thinking about it from game situations, that's a good point. Like, a rim-protecting five,
yes.
I think is kind of critical, even if he's a backup guy. Speaking of bigs, some people might think he's a big, some people might not think he is. Kyle Kuzma has popped up as an intriguing option for the Houston Rockets in free agency. I didn't realize Kyle Kuzma averaged over 20 points per game last year in Washington. I don't watch a ton of Bullet
team,
basketball.
Yeah.
But he averaged over 21 with the Bullets last year. Which,
the Bullets?
Yeah, it's a joke.
Oh.
What do you think about the Kyle Kuzma experiment? Are you intrigued at all about Kyle Kuzma as a free agent option for the Houston Rockets?
I'm not. Because, again, now you're talking about a guy that's going to take a lot of significant minutes. And he wants to shoot the basketball. I mean, you just said he averaged 20 points a game. That's a first red flag for me because you're bringing in a guy.
Yeah, I hate 20 point per game scores.
Yeah, well, no, I hate it when you're trying to groom kids that are supposed to be 20 point per game scorers.
I agree with you.
So the fact that when he comes in and he probably had a career year in scoring, now you're going to say, hey, by the way, he's coming in thinking he's going to actually build on his career year in scoring.
Especially if you're paying him.
Yeah. And so, like, and again, I always emphasize in free agency, if you're coming in and getting big dollars, you're going to try and at least equal the numbers you had the year before. I don't want that many shots going up in coming from Kyle Kuzma's hands or trying to achieve that goal when you have the guys you have on this roster you're trying to develop. I don't like it. I don't need it. And he's going to want more than a Dylan Brooks. And I'm out.
You're probably signing Kuzma and Fred VanVleet, and that's probably it. Like, if you were to sign Kuzma.
Yeah, especially with Kuzma coming in, being more of a scorer now that he, you know, kind of got to spread his wings a little bit in Washington. Now he's coming to a team, like Joel's saying, with nothing but 21-year-olds around him. He's the big free agent splash. He's going to view himself as, like, offense rolls through Kuzma. That's not really – and he's not a creator for others, really. Kuzma is a, I get the ball, I put it in the hoop.
It's going to be an empty 20 points. It's going to be a Kevin Martin 20 points. Like, it's not going to lead
to winning basketball. You just hit the epitome of empty 20-pointers.
Yeah, it's what it is.
Kevin Martin, we used to always joke, he might be the most highly efficient first and second quarter scorer that will never, ever make an appearance in the fourth quarter when you need him. He disappeared in the fourth quarter of games the entire time with the Rockets and for the majority of his career. He was unbelievable in the first three. Forget about him in the fourth.
Yeah. Tracy McGrady trade.
Kevin Martin?
What was the trade where the Rockets got him?
Kevin Martin was... He went in the Oklahoma City trade for Harden.
Yeah, but the Rockets, I thought, got him in the... I thought it was the Tracy McGrady trade.
What? I don't...
I'll have to look at that.
I'll run the research in the break.
Because we got Mac for Coutinho Mobley, Steve Francis, Kelvin Cato.
Yeah, that was the trade with Orlando.
And change, and with Orlando. And then did the Rockets didn't trade McGrady.
Yeah, it was a three-team trade with the Kings, Rockets, and Knicks, it looks like. Where McGrady went to the Knicks, and from Sacramento, Kevin Martin came here.
Really? I don't remember that.
Carl Landry, Joey Dorsey involved in those trades.
I just pulled up the Pro Basketball Reference on that.
Yeah.
They traded half the league. There's 15 names.
I try to keep it as like simple
as
possible.
Was McGrady done, or did he do...
It was in 2010.
Yeah, McGrady was basically... He was in the league a few more years, but he was done.
Yeah, he was washed at that point. Yeah, he was in the McGrady trade. 713-780-ESP at HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Sounds like we're out on Kyle Kuzma.
Mm-hmm.
Empty 20 points. We don't want that. Eight teams last year finished last in their division. There's eight divisions. There's a seller in each one of them. Where do the Texans rank amongst those eight teams? We're talking only last place teams from a year ago. Where are the Texans relative to the rest of the cellar dwellers in the National Football League in 2022? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Well, it's another hot summer in Houston, and that means radio signals are most affected by tropospheric ducting. So remember all of your options. Your FM radio presets, 97.5 and 92.5, your free smartphone app, or ESPN97.5.com that you can run through your car speakers. And don't forget Twitch, where your ducting is not tropospheric. ESPN 97.5, you have options. Hey Houston, you're live in the Hive with the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
0002, full disclosure, I like Branham, however he antagonizes Blankers intentionally. Cut it out, fool. Maybe it's intentional, but it comes naturally. I don't know how to stop it. Maybe there is a rehabilitation for that, but I'm sorry in advance, Blankers, but it's probably not going to stop. It's just natural. I can't help myself. I can't bite my tongue.
Amy Winehouse.
Little rehab?
You tried to go to rehab.
It didn't work out that well for Amy Winehouse. Maybe rehab is not the answer.
Like you're saying, it didn't work out for you either.
Maybe that's not the answer. Rehab is not.
Isn't that the song? I tried to go to rehab and no. So there you go.
But I don't think she's with us anymore.
I know she's not.
Okay, I'm making sure.
Yeah, I know.
Making sure. So if it didn't work out for Winehouse, it ain't going to work out for Branham. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. There's eight divisions in the NFL. You may or may not have known this. The Texans finished last place in their division, one of the eight, the AFC South. If you go and look at last year's NFL standings, and, you know, everybody talks about this. You always hear this phrase in the NFL because it's an 8-8 league, ask Bill O'Brien. But it's a league that is built on parity. You have last place teams that go from worst to first all the time. If you're looking at the division, the cellar dwellers in the National Football League a year ago, I need to stop saying National Football League. That annoys me. The New York Jets last in the AFC East. The Browns were last in the AFC North. The Texans last in the South. Broncos last in the East. The NFC. Commanders, even though they're a 500 team, 8-8-1, they were last in the East. Chicago was last in the North. Atlanta was last in the South, and Arizona was last in the West. How do the Texans stack up? And look, I don't want to turn this into the, well, the Texans go worst to first. I don't want to do that, highway to hell. But relative to the other cellar dwellers around the NFL, how do the Texans stack up with those teams?
Well, Jeremy, there's one in particular that could make this a very interesting conversation that I think you probably don't want to have right now.
Go ahead. I want to have it now.
That would be the Cleveland Browns, because you would go, how do you stack up against them? Well,
I think there's another team, though.
But I think the Browns, because of that trade and that pick, and because of how important it is now because you traded your own away, are going to have a whole lot of eyeballs on how those two teams fare. And I truly believe the Browns are going to have a better season. I don't think they're going to be a last place team. I think they're going to be on the cusp of fighting for a playoff spot. And I think that that's going to get the ire of a lot of Texans fans.
Yeah. See, the Browns I would put in my, these are my eight teams and I'm betting and I'm trying to stack them up how they're going to finish in the NFL season. Cleveland's my second. Cleveland's two to me. They're behind
the Commanders?
The Jets.
Oh, the Jets. Well, of course, the Jets.
Yeah. I have the Jets higher than I have the Browns, but I think they're on the same tier. Yeah. Like these eight teams, Jets, Browns, Texans, Broncos, Commanders, Bears, Falcons, Cardinals, for me, and USA Today put together their list. They disagree with me. We'll get to that in a second. For me, my top tier of those eight teams are the Jets and the Browns.
Yeah, see, I didn't hear you say the Jets, but I knew that the Browns was going to be interesting because of the trade and the two picks and how they fare with the team's records. I think the Commanders are interesting because if they upgrade at quarterback at all with what they have.
You think Sam Howell's an upgrade?
I don't.
I'm intrigued by him, but I'm not going to say he's an upgrade.
For this season.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I think if there was any other option, that would be a much better football team.
Uh-huh.
But the Jets are the obvious slam dunk. The Jets are the best team head and shoulders amongst any of those other seven teams. And you add Aaron Rodgers and everything else that they add and have continued to add to, and now they're at least considering Dalvin Cook. They're in go-for-it mode, and I don't think there's any reason to doubt the fact that they're the best of those eight teams.
Commanders might be the one team in the NFL that's the hardest for me to put my finger on what they're going to look like offensively, because as you know, I'm a fantasy football fiend. Yeah. I have no idea what the Commanders are going to look like. Like, they could be... Look, this is going to sound crazy. I think there's a chance, if everything breaks right, that the Commanders can have a top 15 offense in the NFL. Now, Sam Howell needs to be a hit. He needs to be a sophomore sensation. Brian Robinson, Antonio Gibson, like, I'm pretty – that kind of intrigues me. I'm a little intrigued by Brian Robinson, Antonio Gibson. You look at Scary Terry and then Dotson, who they drafted out of Penn State last year. Logan Thomas ain't bad at the tight end spot. But the biggest wild card for the Commanders offensively for me is the guy calling plays there
now.
And like, is Eric Bieniemy a genius or is he not? Because if he's a genius, Washington's going to be good offensively.
The problem is if you want to see if he's a genius or not, you probably think he'd like to have a better option at quarterback.
For sure.
I think that with a better option at quarterback, that's where I started the entire conversation with this team. If they had anybody else at quarterback, if they had a veteran that had something left in the tank Bieniemy could work with, there are enough weapons there, and that defense is still good enough that team could make a significant jump, but with Sam Howell at quarterback.
He's going to have to stun people. Yeah. Sam Howell's going to have to stun people for that offense to be top half in the NFL, and quite frankly, if I was betting on it, I would bet that he's not going to.
See, and I also treat him like I would C.J. Stroud in the fact that this is truly just his rookie season as a starting quarterback.
Sure. I think he started one game last year.
Yeah, and so to me, that's insignificant. He's going to take his lumps and struggle simply because this is his first time as a starter in the league.
We got the Jets and the Browns in our top tier. I'm very intrigued by Denver. I don't love their roster, although it's got pieces. I don't love Russell Wilson, but you've added in Sean Payton. He should, I'm not going to say fix Russell Wilson, but maybe put a Band-Aid on Russell Wilson.
You know what he's going to do? He's going to properly utilize the rest of his offensive weapons so that he can upgrade
Russell
Wilson.
They have weapons. Like, if Javonte Williams comes back, their receiving corps is good.
That's what I'm saying. So he may not be able to fix Russell Wilson, but with play calling and the way he gets the skill position players in the best positions to be effective, he's going to upgrade the entire offense.
They're not on the same tier for the Jets-Browns?
Nope.
Better than the Texans?
Yes.
Okay, so we've defined three tiers now. Jets, Browns, tier one, Denver, tier two, Texans, tier three. Yep. We might define more. Where did you have the Commanders? Are they on the same tier as the Broncos? Better than the Broncos? Worse than the Broncos?
Worse than the Broncos because of quarterback.
But better than the Texans or worse than the Texans? Or same tier as the Texans?
Because they're a little bit more established on both sides of the football, I'd say they're slightly above the Texans.
Okay, so you have them ahead of the Texans, behind the Broncos. How about the Chicago Bears, who we both have bets against the Chicago Bears winning the NFC North? Joe's such a bad bettor. I feel bad for Joe.
I never feel bad for
Joe. He bet on the Bears to win the division outright. They're getting plus odds.
But he's a resource, Jeremy, that we can tap into anytime when we want to win.
I feel guilty doing it.
We can win. We can profit. We can excel because of the stupidity of Joe George. I'm all for it.
What are their odds to win their division just in Vegas right now, Sportsbook? They're plus 420. He could have had plus 420. He's making straight-up bets with us.
Yep, and I love every minute of it. I don't think the Bears are going to be significantly better. I think Justin Fields still has a long way to go passing, but he's still, I believe he has talent. I don't believe that he's got all the right weapons around him. And I just think that they're in a 3 to 5 year window to try and put pieces around him and get better. I don't expect it's going to be a significant jump this year. So I would say...
Better or worse than the Texans?
Man, I would say slightly better.
I think they're on the same tier. I put the Commanders on the same tier, too, as the Texans. I have the Broncos, I have the Browns, and I have the Jets ahead of them.
But the rest of their defense for Washington is really good.
Yeah, I'm also throwing in the schedule, though. Like, the Commanders are going to be playing a very difficult division.
Eagles and Cowboys.
Like, if you go Commanders-Texans, they play each other 10 times. I think the Commanders win 6 or 7 times. But if you play out the season 10 times, I think the Texans are going to finish with the same record as the Commanders 10 times because of the schedule.
The schedule makes a difference.
Because of the schedule.
You're right.
Atlanta, well, this was a 3-way tie in the NFC South for last place in what was a brutal division. 8-9 Tampa won it. You have Carolina, you have the Saints, and you have the Falcons all at 7-10 a year ago. Which of those teams do you like? Which of those teams do you not like?
Division is absolutely wide open.
It's a terrible division.
And again, Atlanta, I put in the same category with a different kind of spin on it. But Atlanta is the kind of team that if they had any quarterback play at all, it looks like a lot to me like Washington.
Yeah.
Like if you get the right quarterback in that situation with Kyle Pitts, with a really good running back now and two running backs to work with some of the guys you already have on that roster and a decent offensive line, I think that's a team that could take a significant jump.
Yeah. You mentioned Bijan?
Yeah, I said, yeah, with two good with Bijan and two good running backs.
They seem like they're a quarterback away. It feels like if they get a solid quarterback, they could be playoff good.
Look, Mariota, and though he wasn't great last year, they intentionally sat him down late in the year because they knew that they were getting close in that division because they still know that they needed young pieces.
Right.
But Marcus Mariota had that team at least competing in a discussion for the last playoff spot.
I think their hope is that Ridder can be that next year and then has a ceiling where he can be better. I really don't. I'm not that bullish on Ridder. I like the Saints. I think Carr's a huge upgrade over Andy Dalton.
Yep.
It's a defense that was already good. They have some pretty good skill position guys as well. Carolina rookie quarterback. I can't put a whole lot of stock in that.
Saints defense took some hits. They let Davenport and a couple pieces get away.
Yep.
But, Kamara is where that all sits right now. If Kamara could get out of the legal issues in Vegas and he could be anywhere close to where he used to be as a weapon for Carr, I think you're right. I think the Saints are significantly better, and I think they'd be the favorite to win that division. I just look at it and go, Tampa's not a factor to me.
Nope.
With the quarterback in a situation in Atlanta, they're not a factor to me, though I think they're going to be better because of their skill positions.
I think they're going to go 7-10 again. I think they're a 7-10 team.
But I think it would be the Saints division to lose.
Oh, I completely agree. I think the Saints are the best team in that division. I think they upgraded significantly at quarterback. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the division's lousy. Arizona, last place, the awful. last place team.
You're not going to have Kyler for at least half the year.
I think they're going to be the worst team in the NFL.
I think you're probably right.
And I think it's going to be by far, honestly.
They might control the top two picks in the draft.
You know what's interesting with Arizona is that top two.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Texans?
Mm-hmm.
Oof.
Yeah.
What's interesting about Arizona is that they drafted Josh Rosen.
Yeah.
They were lousy. They got the first pick. They drafted Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray could get Kyler Murray'd. Kyler Murray could get Kyler Murray'd next year in the NFL draft. They could go Caleb Williams and be like, Kyler, we appreciate all the stuff you did for us.
The only difference is that unlike Josh Rosen, Kyler Murray will find another job in the NFL, but I don't think it's going to be the kind of job that he wants.
Yeah, Kyler will find a job just because he's so talented.
Yeah, Josh Rosen was just a...
I think he's still in the league.
No.
I think he might be. I think he was on a team last year.
No way.
I'm pretty sure he got signed on several practice squads,
the
actually.
The USFL? Is that the league you're talking about?
Way. Pretty sure he got signed to a couple of practice squads.
I don't think
squads.
He's been in the league for – he got a tryout maybe, but I don't think he's been in the league for a couple
Houston
of years.
Houston Gamblers?
I think he was. I think he got signed to a couple of practice squads. Like, he's never played in a game.
Yeah, I think in the 18 teams playing in Birmingham, all with cities on their chest.
2022, Cleveland Browns waived Josh Rosen. So he was on their team. Yeah.
He was in training camp.
No, most recently, Josh Rosen was signed to the Minnesota Vikings December 20th, 2022, to the practice squad. Now, they've released him since then, okay, a month later, but this was as soon as this winter. Josh Rosen was in the NFL last year.
In.
That's technical term.
Yeah, he got an employee card.
I don't know that he ever stepped in the facility.
He got a T-shirt.
He got his name in the transactions for a day. Two days.
He was signed
when they brought him in and one when they let him go.
He was signed by Cleveland on September 1st. He was released on October 10th. So he spent a month and a week there.
Yeah.
And then he was signed to Minnesota's practice squad on December 20th. So not only was he employed in the NFL, he was employed by two teams in the NFL. That's how good
did he ever suit up
Josh
for a game?
Rosen is. I don't think he played in a game. Mm. I'm not even sure he dressed.
That's what I'm saying. Did he ever suit up in a game? No. I know he didn't play in a game. I just asked if he actually put on a helmet.
You know what he does well? He holds clipboards very well. Josh Rosen
does.
If
he did, he'd still be in the league.
Is there a last place team? He was last year. Is there a last place team that the Texans are better than? I think Arizona's clear.
Yep.
Is there anybody else? Are they better than Atlanta?
No.
Are they better than Carolina?
Nope.
I think it's kind of a tie there.
It's close.
How about Chicago?
Close again, but nope.
Commanders?
Nope.
I think they finished with the same record, not as good a team as the Commanders. Denver? No. Cleveland? No. Jets? No.
Nope.
USA Today?
Yep.
They rated them Jets 1, Atlanta 2. Chicago 3, Cleveland 4, Commanders 5, Broncos 6, Texans 7, Cardinals 8.
They're a little off.
Yeah, that second one's kind of reaching.
I think they're saying most likely to win their division, to go worst to first.
Worst to first, second,
so,
Atlanta.
So
I still disagree.
I do too.
I don't, because of how bad the NFC South is.
Yeah, Atlanta's division is the most winnable.
That's a fair point. Yeah. That's a fair point. I just don't see them winning the division, though. That's kind of my hang-up. I think that the Saints are far better.
I don't see any of those
better.
Teams winning the division. Someone has to do it.
That's a good point. That's a good point. So there's grading on a curve at the NFC South. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, every Thursday at 1:30. Who made the list of Bad Take Boulevard? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. So many bad takes on sports. What do you do with all of them?
Only there is something in your head to control the things you say.
Well, the Killer Bees use them to build an actual street where they can get run over for all eternity.
Eternity.
What's that street? Bad Take Boulevard.
Did you notice promo. You know what promo he played during the break?
No, I was busy.
He was he played the Paul Gallant promo.
It's a good show. It's a good show. People should check it out.
So when Joe's not in here force feeding the listeners to the bullpen only on the day that he does it, you're in here force feeding the show that you already did before us while we do ours.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. But I keep it in the break.
I just
keep it in the break.
Make that clear.
You can't see the strings that I'm pulling.
First person who made the list of Bad Take Boulevard. Look, we're fair on the Killer Bees. No one is off the table. Even ourselves. I got Scott yesterday on Twitter. I thought that the Rockets were interested in Josh Primo. I read a tweet wrong. I land on Bad Take Boulevard.
You put yourself on Bad
Take. I have to. It's the worst take.
Self-reported.
I mean, hey. If we consider ourselves to be honest, transparent, that everybody can be placed on the list of Bad Take Boulevard, I got to be for getting got on Twitter. So I take the top of Bad Take Boulevard this week. I made the list. You have anything?
Yeah, there's been a couple of the bloggers that are trying to make these, using quotes, educated guesses on what the Rockets are going to do. And I just think some of them are just so outlandish in terms of, like, the lack of wherewithal to think these veterans have to want to play here too. But, like, they also have to be cognizant of, like, how much money the Rockets truly have to spend. I saw one of them put in a new starting lineup that involved not only to get them, but the starting lineup that involved Brook Lopez, Dylan Brooks, Fred Van Vliet. And then they were saying, and for the bench, I'm going, stop right there. You've already exceeded two salary caps. What are you doing?
Yeah. Some of the Twitter general managing you see is pretty good. It's pretty good. Jake Asman makes the list twice this week on Bad Take Boulevard. What do you want first? Do you want his top five radio host, or you want him doing math?
I'll let you decide.
What do you want, Sean? What do you want first?
To do this?
Let's do math. Boy, I forgot you don't mention his name. Host. Yeah.
You want to do the math one first?
Yeah.
All right, here is Jake Asman trying to do math a couple of days ago on his very fine radio program.
Mapping out the last 13, I think if they're able to go 9-6, which I think is doable with the schedule, they're in prime position to still be in the mix post-All-Star break. They'll get Yordan back, and then the division, I believe, at that point in time is still winnable for the Astros.
Where are you getting 9-6?
In the last 13.
You said there are 13 games between now and the All-Star break. How are you getting 9-6?
How am I getting 9-6? This sounded better when I wrote it out.
The most underrated part of that clip was Cody's laugh.
The laugh.
The Cody. That's why I let it go on and on and on. Because really, we could have had the 13 games, 9-6 in the first 3 seconds. But how are we going to not play the laugh for the Hive?
I didn't know they had Mrs. Doubtfire on the air. I thought they were going to at least post the clip so we could have used them on our show.
I have an aunt who laughs that way.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I do.
Your aunt,
Aunt
Cody.
Aunt Stutes. Right there.
Auntie Stutes.
Yeah. Oh, no, dear.
Auntie Stutes.
Mrs. here,
man,
dear.
I didn't know Cody had that octave. Maybe I should have. Maybe I should have known that he could get up there.
That's the Bok Bok Chicken.
He got up there with that octave.
My daughter has a toy that does that called the Bok Bok Chicken.
Jake lands on Bad Take Boulevard for thinking that 9-6 is 13 games, and here we are talking about the Aunt Stutes' laugh. Oh, man.
Some really good.
He's got some ups. Cody's got some ups.
Really good.
One more time. That's the reason that Jake landed on Bad Take Boulevard. The math was just for the
last.
Was that
the whole feather duster, Cody?
Man.
Oh, my goodness.
Impressive.
Hoochie-coo.
Impressive. You want to Asman Soft 5 radio host, or you just want to play Cody's laugh for the next 3 minutes? Jake Asman. Maybe,
the same, isn't it?
Maybe Cody can laugh at Jake Asman's Soft 5 radio host list.
Or national?
This is national, although there is one local because he's trying to kiss up after losing a feud.
Oh, John Granato made it then, yeah.
John Granato made his
shocker.
List because he lost a feud to John Granato in convincing fashion. Asman's top five radio hosts to save the planet, because they're going up against the aliens and they need radio hosts for some reason. Howard Stern, which, look, Howard Stern had a period of greatness, so that's a tough one to argue.
A bank account that's still greatness.
Yeah. Yeah, and, I mean, Howard Stern had a period of greatness in radio. There's no doubt about it. He had Rush Limbaugh on his list. Remember Limbaugh on ESPN?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He wasn't on Monday Night Football,
yes,
was he?
Was.
They had him on Monday Night Football.
Yes, he was.
I thought so.
Yes,
but I was like,
was.
No way that they actually put him on Monday Night Football. But I thought that he was.
Yes, he was.
How did they put Rush Limbaugh on Monday Night Football?
Kornheiser, Dennis.
Miller. Dennis Miller.
Yep.
Like, at least Kornheiser knows sports and, like, was a little comedic relief. Like, Limbaugh on Monday Night Football was wild. Maybe that does speak to the greatness of him as a radio host, that he could go from political radio to Monday Night Football. That's crazy, man.
Fooling people, fake it till you make it. He made it.
Isn't that nuts?
It really
doing
is.
Doing political radio, and then he's on Monday Night Football?
Especially because how divisive you are when you do political, no matter which side you're on.
Right. You're not placating to, like, everybody.
Which
you're
is
not
what
going
Disney
right down the aisle.
And ABC and Monday Night Football is.
Well, that's why he didn't last long, right?
Yeah, I understand.
Because of politics.
Yeah. I looked up Rush Limbaugh at ESPN, and an article from 2003, Limbaugh quits ESPN over race controversy.
Yeah, not surprising. A lot of people aren't happy with ESPN now either, because of the other end of the spectrum. It's like, why? You just go right down that aisle. Don't go down the left side of the aisle. Don't go down the right side of the aisle. Go right down the... That's why I don't do politics. I don't do politics. Chris Mad Dog Russo was on Jake's list. Don Imus.
I was about wondering race controversy.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Who oozes controversy? Don Imus on women's basketball.
Yeah, I don't want to go there.
No, I don't think anybody should.
I can't believe that Jake had I'll be honest with you, Jake had some bravado putting Imus on his list. Like, he could have potentially been canceled for supporting Don Imus.
Just avoid it.
And then he kissed John Granato's butt. He had Stern, Limbaugh, Mad Dog Russo, Imus, and Granato, his top five radio hosts to save the planet. Jake's went full 180 on Granato. Wanted him fired, and now he's putting him in his top five radio hosts to save the planet.
Somewhere right now, Paul is pissed.
Paul?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Paul's like, how am I not on that list?
Oh, I gotcha.
That's too racist.
I mean, I'd rather have Paul than Imus.
Yeah.
You're so kind.
Just saying.
Yeah, me too.
I sometimes I listen on the other end of the dial from the FM to the AM to prepare for this very segment.
Uh-huh.
Yesterday's Astro win big, right? You know, they come from behind, they win the game, everybody feels good. It's like, is this the game that can right the ship for the Houston Astros? Can they build off of those momentum? What did I hear on Highway to Hell today? What did I hear on Highway to Hell? Uh-uh. It was none of that. It was no positivity. It was no, here's the world champions figuring it out. It was no, they got Altuve back. They're ready to win. It was no, none of that. None of that. It was the Astros season is toast. The Astros are done. Just close the curtains. The season is over for the Houston Astros. That's what I heard today on the Highway to Hell.
Was this after Kyle Tucker missed an 0-3 count?
This was 0-3 count.
which has been tweeted in the past as well as used.
I know what you're saying there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They got the ball strikes. They got it mixed up before on the Highway to Hell. Mm-hmm. No, but the Astros season is toast because Christian Javier is washed and they cannot survive not having Christian Javier.
I can only imagine which of the esteemed.
What's your guess?
The Baytown Batty.
No. He doesn't make hot takes like that. He's on the fence.
The Sweaty Locker?
Uh-huh.
There you go. I knew he'd be in the ballpark.
Which doesn't surprise you, right?
He blocked me.
Lance's who?
Never met him in my life.
Oh, really?
Yeah, blocked me.
That happens a lot, I hear.
Yeah, I've heard that. I don't know if I'm still trying to get over it.
I've heard that in the past. It's a weird move. Just mutes people.
Right.
LZ, our very own Lance Erline, yes. His kids are landing on the list of Bad Take Boulevard. Lance tweeted this out earlier this week. My 16-year-old believes that he could cook NBA players from the 50s if he went back in time. He's not on a varsity basketball team or AAU team, but he's 6'2 with a plus jumper, but below average strength and quickness. He and his younger brother really believe that whoever played in before the 2000s were plumbers. So Lance's 16-year-old
kid. Before the 2000s is way different than the 50s right. And 60s because most of those guys are dead.
Right, yeah. So his 16-year-old believes that he could cook NBA players from the 50s if he went back in time. So, like, this is him right now going back in time to play players in time, in real time, from the 50s. So, like, the Wilts and the Bill Russells and, like, the Oscar Robertsons. Lance Erline's
dribbling circles around.
Lance Erline's 16-year-old thinks he can take Oscar Robertson in a game of one-on-one. He thinks he can take Will Chamberlain in a game of one-on-one.
Play and nothing against him, but don't poo-poo all over some of the guys that played back then.
He is on, yeah, his kids made the list. They made the list of Bad Take Boulevard, which, to be honest, is in great company this week because I'm on it. Jake is on it. It's a great list to be on this week. And Cody Stutz's laugh. I forgot about that. How could I? I'm going to have nightmares about that laugh. All right, that does it for Bad Take Boulevard. If you have other people that should have made the list, you can tweet them at Pac-Man Joel. Speaking of Christian Javier, look, let's be honest. He did not pitch well yesterday. He's been poor in back-to-back starts. Does the downfall of Christian Javier increase the need for pitching on the Houston Astros this year? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
All teams covered. No stalking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Christian Javier got roughed up yesterday. He did not pitch well. Back-to-back outings where Javier's not pitched well. Fastball velo is down. The spin on the fastball's down. It is revolutions per minute, by the way. I looked it up during the break.
Huh?
I'm just going to start saying spin rate, though. That sounds way better. I'm going to heed King of Twitch's advice.
It's not a 50-yard dash. It's a...
But it is a big number. It is weird that they would use a minute on something that takes a sudden instance. You're right. I agree with you on that. It's kind of weird. But not great from Javier. I mentioned the velo, the RPM, the spin rate. Not great for Christian Javier. Some people on the Twitter that I was talking to about this, they say that his arm angle appears to be different, and that apparently some say
there's part of the mechanics
analytics.
Huh?
Yeah, that would speak to the analytics on that. It absolutely would. But it does raise the question. Look, Javier right now, he's the number two starter on this team. We've talked about the formidable duo of this team as well, with Framber Valdez being a betting favorite earlier this week to win the Cy Young. Last year finished top five Cy Young voting. Christian Javier had a stellar year a year ago, and he started off this season really good. He's still 7-1. His ERA is still like 3.25 or 3.75. So, like, you still have hope that Javier is going to figure it out. But right now, who would you trust as your second starter?
Hunter Brown.
I would trust Hunter Brown more than Javier, too.
I would, right now. Now, do I think that Javi can figure it out? Yes, I do.
Same.
And because it's not, as far as we know, injury-related, I believe that you've got two good pitching coaches, you've got a really good pitcher you're working with, and I believe with all the different resources they have with technology and everything else, I believe that he will get right, they will work it out. The one concern is the fact that we've set what we've highlighted about the wear and tear, especially this year with the World Baseball Classic, all the innings pitched since he's been an Astro, and the deep playoff runs. Hunter Brown looks like he fixes his wrongs quickly. He attacks. He's got plus-plus stuff on multiple pitches. And I think for those reasons, all he's lacking that Javier has right now is the experience of deep playoff runs in big-time games with bright lights, big stage. But once he gets that, I think it's an easier choice.
Yeah, Javier clutch. Yep. Like Javier's had some really unbelievable moments on the big stage. I mean, he threw a no-hitter in a World Series game. One of, what, two that has ever
two
happened?
All-time.
Larson,
yep.
And then that one was the second. So Javier has that clutch gene, but not going well right now. I would say right in this moment that Hunter Brown will be my second most trusted starting pitcher behind Fromber. Fromber's the easy one, and he has separated himself. But I would elevate Hunter Brown over Javier at this moment, today.
And I think that we also know sometimes how quirky Dusty gets about when he sets his playoff rotations too, about matchups and coming from one guy to the next guy where he might juggle those three guys anyway. But I definitely think as of right now that Hunter Brown is your number two.
So with the way Javier's pitched back-to-back starts, and we try not to be prisoner in the moment, and you're going to go through some rough stretches no matter if you're a hitter or if you're a pitcher, and Javier's ceiling is still really, really high. You've got to get him going. That is priority number one for the Houston Astros, is to get him back, whether it's the arm fatigue, whether it's the slot, getting some spin and some velo on the fastball. Whatever it takes to get Javier right, that is the most important thing at this moment. But seeing Javier pitch poorly in his last two starts, does that increase the need for pitching at the deadline for the Houston Astros?
I was thinking about this morning, and the biggest thing that came to my mind was, as much as we've said, look, they need to get a bat. They need to upgrade this lineup. And then we even debated, like, well, is it going to be a left fielder, a first baseman, ideally a guy that can play both? Is it a left-handed hitter or a right-handed hitter? But then again, we started debating playing time if the other guys are healthy. You've got Yordan Alvarez swinging again. Now you've got Michael Brantley swinging again. And so at least these are positive steps that lead you to believe both guys will be back. We believe and know that Yordan should be. We don't know, but we are led to believe and assume that Brantley eventually will be. If that's the case and Javier has been struggling, does it now change your level of urgency to move away from the bat a little bit more and focus more of a frontline caliber type starter that can be inserted into and or enhance your top three pitchers that we just talked about? I think we might be getting close to that point.
713-780-3776. Javi pitching poorly the last two. Does that flip the script, or maybe you're already there, on what is the bigger priority for the Houston Astros? 713-780-3776. You say that it's getting close. I think that the gap has been closed between between batter and pitcher. I'm still bat over arm, because I look at Javier that you have to get him right no matter what. Like, you have to get Christian Javier right no matter what. And if you don't get Christian Javier back no matter what, you're going to be in a tough spot whether you trade for an arm or you don't trade for an arm. Like, whatever arm that you trade for isn't supposed to be the number two starter on the Houston Astros. It's not supposed to be an arm that's going to be elevated over whoever Christian Javier is. It's to basically, be a guy that's an upgrade tremendously over Ronel Blanco during the regular season, and then be an upgrade in a playoff rotation over J.P. France. That's what you ultimately want. Todd the Show says, welcome to Houston, Shane Bieber. Don't look now, but the Cleveland Guardians are in first place in the American League Central.
Yep.
So that's kind of what Dana Brown was talking to as well when he went on the flagship, is there's not a lot of teams right now that are sellers. There is one team that's
you mentioned Miami yesterday too, which is a team that's right in the thick of it. They're not going to be unloading anybody right now.
The Mets might be unloading.
They might.
I mentioned yesterday Justin Verlander, which that video on that ESPN 97.5 posted, doing numbers, if you haven't noticed, 14,000 views, which has outviewed the previous 8 videos that ESPN 97.5 has posted. Do you know the previous high, or the last video that is still outproduced, that Verlander video, was us talking about Zion joining the Rockets
when we both were on board with exploring the opportunity.
Yeah, this the Justin Verlander video has surpassed the previous eight videos combined, and on my personal Twitter has 141,000 views.
Wow!
So it's intriguing, which is it's in, yeah, at Jeremy Branham.
Yep.
It's interesting too because like you read some of the comments, and I ask the question, who says no? Many people. There's a lot of people who say the Mets. Like there's people that say the Mets say no to this deal. Look, I don't think Justin Verlander is like the top target you would go after as a starting pitcher. I think it's more of a fallback plan. I think a lot of things have to fall in place. Are the Mets going to be sellers? We don't know that they're going to be. Are they going to be motivated to move a Justin Verlander? Would they be willing to take on salary or hold some of Verlander's salary? Because you can't take on the full Verlander salary.
Right.
Either the Mets need to retain a good chunk of it or they need to take Rafael Montero's contract off their hands.
How about both?
That's fine. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I'm going to be cool
with
that.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, they retain 25% of the salary, and they take on Rafael Montero's contract.
Now it's easily more acceptable for me.
Pedro Leon, Rafael Montero for Justin Verlander, and the Mets keep 25% of Verlander's contract.
Done.
I'm intrigued by Justin Verlander back in Houston. And this isn't, well, you're paying all $43 million in Verlander. You're waffling back and forth. No, it's different. Like, my opinions change in 6 months. That's sports. Sports are fluid. Sports change. Things change. I didn't think Rafael Montero was going to be a disaster. I didn't think Rafael Montero was going to get $11.5 million. So it's kind of getting Justin Verlander at a discount. If I get Verlander back, and even if they don't retain any of the salary, and I trade away $11.5 million, I'm getting Verlander at $32 million a year. It's a discounted Verlander.
If they take 25% and you get the added bonus of dumping out on Montero and you still have Corey Lee to use as trade bait if you do want to go out and get another bat, you are really setting yourself up for another World Series run. Now you're loading up across the board. Now you're solving the pitching problem. You still have the ability to solve the extra bat in the lineup hitting problem. And you make your depth, which we've talked about, especially with some of these struggle bus games, where you're like, well, what are your options? You want to pinch hit for Maldi, but if your option to pinch hit for Maldi is Madris, well, how much of an upgrade really is that except for he had two hits at the end of the game last night?
Sparked some rallies last night, Blankers.
But, you know, when you look at Hensley, when you look at the other guys that they've tried to use in these situations, they could use depth. If you could add depth, add a bat, add Verlander, this team is capable of beating anybody in a series.
I think so, too. Like, I think so as well. 713-780-ESPN asking you the question. Christian Javier struggling in his last two starts, Brantley swinging a bat, Yordan swinging a bat again, is it time to focus more on a starter than a bat? 713-780-3776. NBA free agency starts tomorrow. Maybe we start to see some leaks maybe during our show tomorrow. We'll be all over that. It officially opens at 5 Central tomorrow. I have a difficult question for you. You can't have Fred VanVleet.
Okay.
You can't have Fred VanVleet. He's not the point guard for the Rockets next season. If you can't have Fred VanVleet, who do you want to be the Rockets point guard next year? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Are we exposed? This is what every security team is wondering. But with vulnerabilities scattered across network, cloud, AI, and OT silos, the truth is out of reach, and attackers know it. There's a better way. Unify to defy risk with Tenable AI-powered exposure management. Tenable brings together all your security data and exposures in one unified view, giving you the attacker's map and revealing the critical paths and weaknesses they can exploit. Now your teams can prioritize intelligently, move decisively, and collaborate without friction. Tenable turns scattered work into a single proactive force. Instead of chasing noise, your team knows where to focus, gaining clarity, control, and speed to reduce cyber risk with confidence. Learn more at Tenable.com. Tenable. Your exposure ends here.